This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Malcolm Nance as we talk about the plot to hack America. It's just an amazing story, and I've got so much to ask him about when we come back with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Malcolm Nance with us. We'll get to your calls as well as we talk about this incredible story. So are you saying that Donald might be naive about NATO, Malcolm? And then my other question is can one person, the president, get us out of NATO? What kind of hoops does he have to jump through?
Well, I think Donald is a little naive on NATO. And I think that part of the problem is that starting at somewhere around 2012, after his visit to Russia, some of the advisors and people that were around him, and certainly a lot of the Russian oligarchs that he met, started pouring into his ear that, you know, NATO was the big obstacle that stood between the, you know, rapprochement between Russia and the United States. But at the same time, when you say that, you're talking about disassembling the largest defense treaty in the world. And of course, going against the very people that came to our, you know, our assistance in 9/11. But when you do that, you have to also understand that you're going to give the largest, you know, the largest superpower in Eastern Hemisphere free run of Europe. So to, you know, to think about it in those terms, you have to be very deep. And I don't believe the president can personally just abrogate the treaty, because it is a treaty that the United States signed. But he could certainly make the environment so toxic that NATO will come apart and become dysfunctional, essentially turning the Cold War back over to Russia in their favor.
How soon would Putin start making moves if NATO disassembled itself?
Well, Putin has already made these moves. And as I make clear in the book, you know, the United States was not the first country to be hacked by them. They have a political warfare machine over there that brings in all of the facets of the old school KGB together with modern cyber warfare techniques. And so when they go after a country, they go after it with everything. When they had their skirmish with Georgia a few years ago in support of the ethnic Russian South Ossetians, they knocked down all internet traffic into that country, immobilized all communications into that country, and in some instances took over parts of their air defense and military computer structure. When they had a protest that broke out in Estonia at a statue of a former in a graveyard of Soviet soldiers, it started off with militias, just individual Russians who immobilized the Estonian internet over there. And then that was piled onto by Russian intelligence, that completely stopped Estonia and their use of internet. And Estonia at that point had been the single largest and most wired nation in the world per capita. And so, of course, it just essentially shut the country down. And in the Ukraine, just last year, they seized 3 Ukrainian power plants remotely and shut off power for 80,000 people. So they have the capacity to do these things as part of their political and military operation. And so, you know, with that being said, you know, with a more aggressive posture, they seized the Crimea. And Crimea, by the way, was one of those places in the Ukraine. It was part of the Ukraine, even though it's ethnically Russian. That NATO had been running exercises in its defense. And after they had turmoil in the Ukraine and then suffered a lot of cyber operations and political operations, Russia invaded and just seized it. So that's where it presently stands.
If this election is as close as I think it's going to be, and some of the swing states are going to be critical, what if a country like Russia concentrates on just a few states and they simply say, look, we're not going to play around with all these states. What we're going to do is play around with Ohio or Cleveland or Pennsylvania and nudge it to someone we want. Is that a possibility?
It is definitely a possibility. But the thing is, they're going to be caught because, you know, these state electoral balloting systems all come together in countywide counts.
Would they see it instantly?
No, they wouldn't see it instantly. And that's why, you know, all of this stems from, you know, back when you had to write on a slate or a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Right, and go down columns. that essentially still exist. It's just that the certified tally in many states are all going to come together in a computer model that, you know, shows you by county what's going on and with the number of ballots, you know, that are being manually entered into a computer. Russia does have the capability of going in and temporarily seizing control of computers, or you know, placing viruses into it that will have an algorithm that allows it to completely change for, you know, a day, a week, an hour, the tallies, or to stop the tallies.
Is there a possibility that this election will be tossed out?
Well, this is the problem, okay, because, look, we have two sides of this election. We're all Americans. However, one side has stated, and you know, I have a house in Pennsylvania, that you know, Donald Trump stated very early after his nomination that if Pennsylvania is a state that he can't lose in, and that may have been political rhetoric, but it's been ramped up in the last week. But Donald Trump, you know, the demographics of that state don't favor Republicans. They haven't favored Republicans for some time. Principally because you have the Philadelphia and the outer suburbs, and Pittsburgh and their outer suburbs outnumber virtually everyone else in the state of Pennsylvania. And so demographically, it's been a very difficult nut to crack for Republicans. But if the FSB, you know, / KGB, were to carry out a cyber warfare operation on Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania were to have fluctuating numbers, not even numbers that go in Clinton's favor, but fluctuating numbers, it would give some people call to say that the election is rigged and that there should be a nullification of this election. And what it would do at Russia's bidding, it would break 240 years of American electoral process.
Yes.
It would destroy the fundamental confidence in what the founders of this nation have put together. And it could lead to civil disobedience.
Oh my God.
And armed rebellion.
That's what they want to do then. I think that's what they want. They want the country to eat itself up from within.
Well, you know, to a certain extent, it's possible, you know, because they have money invested in the United States also. You know, when the Soviet Union liquidated, they poured all their money into real estate and fixtures in the United States. And the U.S. Treasury bond is the single most stable financial instrument in the world. However, you know, by, you know, electing someone who's more amenable to their goals, that alone would create enough economic chaos in the United States to where they would become on par with us. Even despite their horrible economy in Russia, they are more unified, and it would allow Vladimir Putin to become the biggest dog in the cage.
Now, you were in the Navy, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in Naval Intelligence.
Naval Intelligence, and I was a public information officer. So I
a PAO.
So. I did not see that much action at all. My unit got called up to Desert Storm the month I retired. I'd been in for 9 years, and I said, yeah, that's, you know, I did my thing. Who anticipated that at all? Wouldn't we have been better off, though, keeping Saddam Hussein in office and Gaddafi in office? Look what's happened now.
Well, you know, each of those were unique situations. Saddam Hussein was at that time, technically no threat to anybody.
Right. And you speak Arabic, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I speak a little bit, too. I'm Lebanese. So.
Oh, yeah. I sort of figured that. Saddam Hussein was of no threat to anybody at that time. We had him boxed in. You know, we had that harassment going on in our no-fly zones, north and south of Iraq. But Saddam was not in league with al-Qaeda in 9/11. And there were no weapons of mass destruction left in Iraq, as we have horribly found out, to the tune of 4,493 American dead. And we created a completely, by accident, by the way, by allowing a situation where all of these new age terrorists could come into Iraq after 2003 and create al-Qaeda in Iraq, which became, in 2006, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. And so by, you know, that's what happens when you don't think through with experts who know that area, you get backlash, you get, you know, you get blowback, and mistakes are made.
Yeah.
With Libya, it was a completely different situation. And I know a lot of people like to blame the president, but, you know, in the intelligence community, we have to go with the facts as they exist in the world. Gaddafi was going to kill everyone in the city of Benghazi. That is pretty sure.
That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah, and you know, this guy was another tin pot dictator. And so when he started his march on Benghazi, he was pretty much going to kill everybody. They were in rebellion, and when I went to Libya soon afterwards to give advice to the transitional council there, it was pretty clear that all the Libyans wanted a beautiful country, by the way, which is like, imagine the entire Lebanese coast, northern Lebanese coast, with nothing on it. No
yeah.
hotels, no bars, no restaurants. It's pristine
yeah.
in Libya.
Yeah.
And it had never been developed, and they had had $250 billion in gold reserves. And Gaddafi had hoarded all of that to himself. These people just wanted what everybody wants in the Middle East, as I like to say, a new Toyota Corolla.
That's right.
And but when they carried out that civil war and they fought and they won and took Tripoli, it wasn't the United States that created the mayhem there. It was the Libyans themselves. They just would not agree to create a single national army and disband the militias, and they have been suffering from that ever since.
And when they got to Gaddafi, what happened to his stronghold that he had for so many years? It just seemed to collapse.
Well, it collapsed because, you know, the writing was on the wall. He was coming down to one tribe in Sirte, which is where he was from. And by the way, once they killed Gaddafi, you know, that town and his tribes were resentful, so resentful, they allowed ISIS back in, and ISIS formed in that city of foreign fighters. And, you know, as a matter of fact, just this afternoon, they announced, Libyan government announced that they have taken the city of Sirte, and ISIS in Libya has been destroyed. There's going to be a few small pockets there, but you know, that's one success story. Now they're going to start pumping oil back out into the world.
All right, let's take some calls here for you as they line up, Malcolm. Let's pick it up by going to Mike in Bend, Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Norrie. I'm a big admirer, and thank you so much for speaking to America as you do.
Thank you.
I've got to say, I'm not as impressed with your guest. He seems utterly able to discard any attempt at objectivity about who Putin would want as president. And my evidence is the left has pretty much converted to Russian-style socialism, but your guest can't imagine Hillary, who embraces that socialist idea more than anyone else, might be attractive to Mr. Putin. And I have to call out your guest.
All right, let's let him react to that. Go ahead, Malcolm.
You know, that's fair. Interesting. One of the things that I wrote extensively in my book about how Russia saw the West during the period of the Soviet Union and that transition when they became essentially a mafia-run state with nuclear weapons, right? So, you know, largest Mercedes-Benz dealer in the world's in Moscow. The difference is that even during the period of the Soviet Union, Russian intelligence organs and apparatus really avoided, they publicly sided with, that they really avoided real socialists, not anything like Bernie Sanders or Americans or even the European socialists, real socialists like you see in Venezuela, in that failed state of Venezuela, and communists like in Angola and in Cuba. The reason for that is that they said there was nothing worse than a hard leftist who was scorned. They would become your worst enemy, and they understood where you came from. So they took great pains to have this public face. But the people that they really wanted to turn, especially in terms of agent recruitment, and I'm on the board of the International Spy Museum here in Washington, D.C., and we have a KGB general, Oleg Kalugin, who's on our board. He's an American citizen now. He's validated all of this. They wanted to turn people that you wouldn't suspect. And so for the most part, you know, Americans whole cloth, okay, are one and the same, despite where our personal political differences are. Hillary Clinton is a greater threat to Vladimir Putin, certainly than Donald Trump is. As a matter of fact, they have a very contentious history. Putin actually insulted Clinton, where he said that it's better not to listen to women. And Clinton came back and insulted him in technically in front of every woman in Russia, where she said, "I know how to handle Vladimir Putin. I've been to an elementary school before."
Oh, geez.
And he took that deeply personal.
Was he livid?
Oh, my God, yes.
Do we need that?
As a matter of fact, that is where the breakdown between the United States and Russia sort of stems, because he's an autocrat moving on to a dictator.
Yeah, I think he's doing this, Malcolm, because he can't stand her so much. He's doing this to try to scare America, you know, whether he's going to or not. But it's a personal thing, isn't it?
It's never personal, I think. I think it's always economic, and it's always about political power. Ever since, you know, when one group of monkeys wanted something from another group of monkeys.
Right.
Granted, there may be personal fights within those spats, but, you know, the whole economic system of the world runs on power, and that power runs on having better access to global markets. And that's forced, for an autocrat like Putin, that comes through military force.
Let's go to Gary in Santa Maria, California. Hi, Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, I wondered what Malcolm thought about the Edward Snowden movie that William Binning was the lead contractor on. Quickly, I was a private consultant to TRW in the 90s, working on the spy satellites out of Redondo Beach, which was practically all CIA. They built the spy satellites at TRW then. And I spent 30 years in AI programming. And the Bluetooth capabilities of the smartphones are extremely vulnerable, not only according to me, but by William Binney, too. And against his advice, they built back doors into Bluetooth. Apple put their AirPods with microphone teamed up with their W1 chip, and also Pokemon Go Plus is Bluetooth compatible, and that's where the vulnerabilities are. You you jam Bluetooth with a 5-watt walkie-talkie with a VFO hook to it. When they retransmit their codes, you just sniff out the codes and you have access. Our own CIA built the back doors that have opened up the hacking from the cell phones that everybody is using, and I look forward to Malcolm's response.
Well, I don't know if he's investigated cell phones, but Malcolm, the floor is yours.
Well, the first thing is, you are old school. Okay? You're talking TRW in Redondo Beach. Okay, I know your age now. You know, and a lot of things to me I would just never say in public, but, you know, right on, more power to him. And, you know, with regards to the Edward Snowden case and the movie itself, you know, I'm old school also, and I worked at NSA for a period of time, as well as other agencies. And let me tell you, man's a traitor.
Let's get back to that, Malcolm. We're at the break already. Wow, what a fast night. And our guest, Malcolm Nance, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and you can see all his works. We're talking about The Plot to Hack America, that one right now, and we'll take your calls when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, Malcolm Nance with us. We'll get to your calls in just a second here. So what's your guess? What do you think will happen during this election campaign?
God, I don't want to guess.
I'm like you. I really don't.
Russia has never done these operations, which they call kompromat, by the way, which means to compromise, which is they usually just, you know, use cyber information to get, you know, nude pictures out of Russian politicians' phones or something like that.
Yeah.
This, they are literally trying to throw the U.S. election. And if they don't get their result, it could end up in turmoil that we have never seen in the history of the United States.
Well, now, explain that. If they don't get their results, what could go wrong then?
Well, again, they could just monkey wrench the election. If it looks like, you know, that if Putin believes it is in his interest to have the United States look like, you know, a third world, you know, election going awry,
right.
He could order his cyber warfare forces to compromise two or three states to the point where, for the first time in our history, someone may challenge the legitimacy of this election. Now, granted, states can tally these things up on a chalkboard like they did back in the 1890s and come up with the exact same result. They're not going to get to the voting.
It would take 3 days, but so what, right?
Sure. It's not going to get to the voting machines. It can be done by hand by, you know, 10 people with calculators the way it was done back in the 60s and the 70s. But, you know, it's just the confidence that we've put into technology, and Russia could throw that to a loop. And there are a lot of people, I think, in the United States who would view this as something, unfavorable to them, and they may even go into armed disobedience.
Would our tech people admit, Malcolm, that there's something technically wrong here, folks? Something's going on? Would they say that during election night?
I think they would, because most of these state tallies are once the counties are done, those tallies are going into the computers.
Into the big system, right?
Yeah, and we know pretty much how fast it takes to calculate, you know, those voting polls, especially when you're coming in. You can see them coming in at 3%, 10%, 15%. And if those numbers suddenly swing in one direction or the other, and they say, hey, we're going to stop that count, there's something going on here, they're not matching our paper and calculations count, that could cause trouble. And I think we're at that point in history, even more dangerous than the 1860 election that led to the Civil War, because there are just some people that don't believe the other side is legitimate. And that's unfortunate for us, certainly those of us who spent their lives trying to defend this process.
This is going to be an interesting night, isn't it?
I'm going to be standing by.
Are you going to be on one of the networks? Or?
Yeah, I'll be on one of the major networks, NBC News.
Okay, great. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Thomas, go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And you and Tommy are going to enjoy New Orleans.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But we'll be working, too.
Yeah. Malcolm Nance, very interesting interview. Given your background with naval intelligence, how is it possible that there could be a limited nuclear exchange and or accidental launch between the Russian Federation and NATO and or the Russian Federation and the United States? There have been a number of incidents that have been documented by people like Seymour Hersh and Peter Pry between Russia and America in the 1980s, the 1990s, where we came close to nuclear launch. Even if it was a limited nuclear launch, it could be devastating to both countries. And I was wondering, given your background, do you think that that is still possible?
Well, anything's possible, but the question is what's probable. Vladimir Putin is a realist. And unless he's recently lost his mind, everyone knows that you cannot make money in an unstable economic environment. And the use of atomic weapons in any capacity, all right, is a sign that you have reached a point of instability, that you are pretty much ready to go to war with the rest of the world.
Right.
There's no circumstance, and I worked at a national nuclear military command post for a short stint, where they show you, when you arrive, they show you a full-scale computer-simulated atomic attack on the United States. And the people who are the biggest anti-nukes in America are the people that work in nuclear weapons. So they do not want to see these things used. If they could be dismantled, they would, especially people on subs and in these command posts. If one, even a small one, were to go off, and this is why we shouldn't even discuss it, when we're talking the presidential realm, like, you know, people have said they want to nuke Raqqa, Syria. Well, there are a lot of considerations that you have to take into account. Let's use that. You know, Russia won't want to completely destroy the global market, because the next day, the entire global market will collapse within hours, you know, and they will.
If it opens at all.
I'm sorry? Yeah, but
if
they won't open
at all.
Yeah, and just imagine that. The entire world, you know, making you a global pariah. All trade would change. It would be the most devastating thing since World War II. But, you know, like I said, you know, there have been people who have said, hey, well, we should nuke Raqqa, Syria. ISIS is the capital. And they don't consider some of the factors, because it's just easy to think of it as a big bomb. It's not a big bomb, okay? I mean, the first thing that most people don't realize is if you explode a small atomic bomb, let's say, 1 to 5 kilotons, you still produce electromagnetic pulse.
That's right.
So
shut,
imagine...
Shut that grid down.
Yeah, well, not here. It won't happen in the United States. But let's say you blow it up in Syria, right? The first thing is, imagine every airplane from Dubai to Frankfurt falling out of the sky. You will kill 100,000 people by just the effect of the weapons.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, they're not...
And that's with a small one, though. A big one would shut down our grid.
Oh, the big one, well, you know, if it was detonated over the United States.
That's right.
Which
that's
is what you would expect the next day if we lost our mind and did that. You would expect China to say, hey, listen, we're going to have to bring you back to the, you know, late 1890s.
Thank God we have our subs out there, Malcolm.
Yeah, but the point is, this talk, we shouldn't even discuss this. These things are designed not to be used.
No, exactly.
And we shouldn't have that conversation. We should, as a matter of fact, we could get rid of most of them and still have the exact same deterrence effect.
Could we be right now on the worst brink of something cataclysmic than ever before?
Yes, and that's only, it's internal. We are creating our own situation where we're preparing for civil war. Political distrust in the United States. I just came back from 7 years living in the Middle East, in a country which was the Beverly Hills in the Middle East, but they monitored your communications. They
Where'd you live? Abu Dhabi? Dubai, probably.
Somewhere over there.
You're not going to tell me. I know these things.
But you know, it's beautiful. They have great hotels, but it's run by one family.
Yep.
And you cross them, you go to prison. You get raped, you go to prison. And when we came back to the United States, you know, my wife practically kissed the ground. She was like, you know, Four Seasons and liberty. So, you know, we like liberty. But right now, people have become so polarized in the United States because, you know, and I'm conservative, you know, there's a far extreme of my party that feels that if they don't get their way, no one gets their way. And we're seeing that in this protest vote that's coming up. And it could lead to civil unrest on a level we haven't seen since 1860.
Whether the Russians do anything or not.
Whether the Russians do anything or not. And the Russians are out to help it happen. So, you know, if real patriots are going to stand up and say, you know, my country before party, right? I do that, and I've been spreading the alarm. People
Absolutely.
Think I'm some crazy hair-on-fire liberal. No, my country comes before everyone, right? And I won't let anybody screw with this election, so I wrote a book about it.
Well, and you did well. And once I found out you were a Navy man, I liked you even more.
Chief.
Let's go to Fred in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Fred, go ahead.
Hey, George, you know, after Hillary Clinton did a play for pay with Vladimir Putin and gave Russia control over 20% of our uranium assets, Bill Clinton went to Moscow and gave a 20-minute speech for $2.5 million. And Malcolm, you know, Russia's had a naval base in Crimea for 500 years. That's their warm water port. How do you expect to get Russia out of Crimea? That's crazy. You know, Russia, as long as they can keep those oil pipelines from going through Syria, they'll have control of Europe as far as energy goes. Don't you agree? Isn't this whole thing about the New World Order, the globalists want to isolate Russia? And isn't Russia afraid that we will do a first strike on them, so they're acting the part to scare us more than we're scaring them?
All right, all good questions. Malcolm, go ahead.
No, and you know, I don't believe in the New World Order. You know, like I said, I have to deal with the world as it exists. We, the United States of America, we created globalism. We created the entirety of all markets after World War II. And we dominated those markets till the fall of the Soviet Union, and our former communist enemies, China and Russia, became capitalist and went our way and are now competing in those markets. And what you're looking at is market forces. Every country wants to dominate trade. Every country wants to dominate some place in their interest. And Syria is just the last Middle East state where Russia had a client. And they, you know, they're selling their weapons like crazy all over the Middle East. But, you know, oil doesn't come from Syria. Syria has very, very little oil that comes out of the Middle East. Most oil comes from the Strait of Hormuz, from Saudi Arabia and Iran. And that oil is now predominantly going to China in order to fuel their new population that no longer has two suits and a bicycle. They all have cars and they want to eat food like us, and China is essentially the biggest player. They're buying most of Africa and creating farms to feed their people. So Russia is actually lagging behind in that, and I think Putin feels like he is third party to the two global trade giants, the United States. And if he can put a monkey wrench into us, he would become the second largest trade partner.
Are they concerned that we would launch first?
No, no, no. No one is. Remember what I said about crazy talk, right?
Yep, yep.
You know, I believe there's a little book, you know, those little passed down books like you have on ships, where you leave something for the person who's taking over your job. And I think in the White House, the president has one, and it says, there's three things you should never do. Never start a major land war in Asia, never melt down the United States economy, and do not use nuclear weapons under any concern. And then after that, it says, you can do what you want politically, right? And unfortunately, George Bush ruined two out of three of those.
I was just going to say that.
He did not even think of going to number three. And we should all not think like that. These aren't toys. These are technically, you know, you blow up a nuke. Like I said, that scenario, nuking Raqqa, Syria, within 1 hour, Israel is under a radiation cloud that will...
Well, you've got a guy in North Korea who has that capability of doing
now,
that.
Now, he's crazy.
Yep.
And that's where you have to use all global pressures. But, you know, the thing that would kill more South Koreans than the North Koreans launching a nuke would be the 40,000 artillery pieces that could pummel Seoul into dust in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, some capabilities look good, but the North Korean nuke actually working, if you know, to tell you the truth, that may be the first place that a nuke is ever used.
I think you're right.
Getting rid of that capability, because it sure won't hurt many people. But, you know, we can't lose our minds and say, because we can do it, let's do it. Okay, these are like putting guns to your children's head, not even to your own.
Why haven't we had this kind of uptightness in a presidential election? I can't remember. I mean, when I really got into it, watching the Kennedy-Nixon debates as a kid, and I remember that, and then all the subsequent elections after that. But this one's different, Malcolm. I mean, I can't put my finger on it, but it just doesn't feel right.
I can put my finger on it. Most other candidates who have run for president are reasonable people. Donald Trump is a billionaire. He's a showman. But, you know, he started running for president after the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where he was humiliated by President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that he's running, and it's my belief, all right? And like you said in your intro, you bring people from all different perspectives. But if this were the election of Burundi, right, some sub-Saharan African country, and you said, Malcolm, I want you to do a full intelligence workup on the Burundi elections, I would say you have a political autocrat who has been part of a dynasty for 30-plus years, and then you have a popular entertainer who is setting the crowds on fire by promising things that will never happen, but the country will go up in flames at the end of it. And what you're seeing is he you know, that showmanship has won. It has won him popular, it won him favor.
It got him the nomination.
But if you're a thinking person, and you're thinking about this nation first, you have to understand this little thing I teach my children, consequence management. Right?
I'd feel a little more secure with Hillary, though, Malcolm, if she had tempered her feelings toward Putin and Russia.
Let me tell you, she ain't going to touch the nuke button.
No, I don't think she will.
You know, no matter what you say, you can do anything you want as President of the United States, but there is a level of, you know, of stability that the world requires.
Well, let's hope he doesn't, because he gets ticked off.
Well, you know, my problem here is not about the individual. My problem is the sentiment. And I think a lot of Americans feel that they're just at the point where they didn't get what they wanted over the last 8 years. And they're ready to throw the Molotov cocktail into their own home.
You're right.
In order to show spite. This is not America, okay? Everybody needs to step back, take a calm breath, and understand that George Washington only did 8-year term for a reason. He did not want a king. He did not want an autocrat. He did not want a dictator. And if we're ready to destroy the American dream and take a step towards fascism, go ahead. But, you know, true patriots are going to vote for this country first rather than an individual first.
We will see what unfolds. Malcolm, where do we get your book?
Well, you can get my book in all bookstores and Amazon.com. And, you know, like I said, be objective about where we come from here and take this alternate perspective.
The plot to hack America. Let's see what happens. Malcolm, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure to be here. Get me on my next book.
Yeah, you got it. Great insight. And, of course, we'll be live for 5 hours on November 8th, election night. And let's see what happens with these voting machines. My gosh, just what we need. Up next, we talk about El Diablo. The devil.